Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 12th of December, Anno Domini 2015. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose. Nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news on 12-12.
Beware the power of the dodecahedron.
The dodecahedron, exactly right.
You should wait and do it at 12-12 at 12-12.
Right. And 3 years ago, 2012.
Yeah.
All right, if the FBI had to choose between telling you about a security hole on your computer or using it to snoop on bad guys, guess what? You'd be left open to hackers, and apparently that's been the case for a while. The agency confirmed on Wednesday that FBI agents use special hacking code to take advantage of known holes in software and further their investigations. They'll continue using these so-called zero-day exploits, but now there could be further scrutiny of the practice. The exploits are controversial, and using them involves a trade-off that could end up making some members of the public less safe. Zero-day exploits take advantage of flaws in common commercial software often used by the general public. To stay effective, the FBI has to use these exploits without telling the software manufacturers there's a problem with their products. The flaws go unfixed then, leaving people vulnerable to hacks, not just from law enforcement, but from cyber criminals as well. What is the greater good? FBI official Amy Hess asked. To be able to identify a person who is threatening public safety, or to protect people from being hacked by patching software holes. Hess is the Bureau's Executive Assistant Director for Science and Technology, so we know what her answer is. Zero-day exploits are hard to discover and expensive to buy, so experts say the hackers using them tend to be from organized crime rings or state-sponsored hacking groups. Handing an exploit to a government buyer and letting the flaw remain unpatched leaves an opening for hackers to implant malicious software on computers. Such malware can collect banking information, create networks of hacked computer attacks, computers that attackers can use on big targets like financial institutions and foreign governments. Who else uses these exploits? Well, try the National Security Agency. It's not surprising, then, that the FBI also takes advantage of them. The difference is that the NSA is responsible for foreign spying, and the FBI investigates crime in the U.S., which means the government is hacking its own citizens. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is the FBI uses zero-day exploits to investigate crime, and your choices are, great, who needs personal freedom? I suppose it's necessary in this day and age. Kind of makes me uncomfortable and strikes me as low down and unethical. So far, we've got, I can't actually read that because it's actually longer than my... Let's see, 25 people so far. So far, 44% of you think it's low down and unethical, followed by 6 of you who think it's necessary in this day and age. At any rate, once you're done taking the poll, if you slide down on the left, under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum on the list is the poll discussion. And currently, the first item on the poll discussion is 12 December 15. The FBI uses zero-day exploits to investigate crimes. I posted, and so did ScreenScream. So if you have something to say, you can post it there. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-04. 15.
We've talked a little bit about this in the past from a different aspect, in that a lot of the white hats will find an exploit and then save it until there's a contest so they can get money.
Yep.
before telling the company that they found this problem in their software.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Even though most of the companies, Google and Microsoft, will have bug bounties and they'll pay you, if you wait for one of the big security conferences, you can win literally $1 million.
Cash it.
There's one guy last year that won over $1 million because he ended up, the one guy hacked everything.
Yep, yep. And basically, the basic, there's jargon in here. A zero-day exploit is one that nobody else knows about, not well, that hasn't been patched yet.
Yeah, I was just saying.
The bad guys know about it, but the good guys don't. So they call it a zero-day exploit, which means that, you know, as far as the patchers are concerned, it's day zero. They don't know about it yet. It's not mm-hmm. even day one.
Yep.
You know, so that's what a zero-day exploit is. And basically what they're saying is the bad guys find these things and then sell them on the dark net. And people buy them and then use them for exploits to break into machines that have not been patched because nobody knows about the exploits to do the patching. One of the people who buys those is the government. And then rather than telling us about it so we can get them patched, telling the software manufacturer or the operating system manufacturer, whoever, so that it can be patched, they use it to break into the computers of alleged bad guys. And
supposedly.
Well, don't forget.
That's their story, and they're sticking to it.
The only way to stop a bad guy with a computer is a good guy with a zero-day exploit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the way that works. So, yeah, it's. I get it. I mean, I do get it. There's, mm-hmm. there's a. I guess they have to make some sort of balance. I guess is the best way to put it between our freedom and our security. And they picked security, and they've been doing that everywhere. Yeah. A lot of that is true. It should be done. It needs to be done. Some of it is just out of fear, which is just another way of saying they're cowards. But mm-hmm. I get that too. So whatever. But it's a little bit of both, and I guess it's which side you fall on, which way you look at it. You know,
mm-hmm.
But. You know, I'm one of those people who believes that we need the more information we have, the better off we are, and that the more we know, the better off we'll be in terms of keeping ourselves safe as opposed to waiting for Big Brother in the sky
be spoon-fed what they want you to know.
Right, right, right. So mm-hmm.
yeah, no.
If you've got any thoughts about that, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I was almost late getting here this morning. My next door neighbor came over to talk to me. They're selling their house.
Uh oh.
They bought like a zillion acres down somewhere in, I think it's in East Nowhere, which is just this side into West Nowhere if you're
okay,
going that
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've got a 2-acre pond, clear water, clean water pond, because there's a creek that goes through it, and they've got lots of acreage, and they were, it's going to be beautiful. So if anybody wants a beautiful house in the Upper Monroe neighborhood with the best, and their home is beautiful.
Homes there were built. I mean, those are homes that if you were to go up into the rafters and that up in the attic, you would see, you know, 2x6s that are actually 2x6s square.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And Nick will be your neighbor, and you can ask him questions anytime you want.
Shut up. Shut up. Okay, nobody come. You can ask all the questions you want. Doesn't mean I have to answer them.
There you go.
But yeah, it's a beautiful house. It's a beautiful neighborhood. The best of city living. And but I'll be sad to see them go. They've been excellent, wonderful neighbors, good people, good people. So I was almost late getting here today because we were chit-chatting. Suddenly I looked at the clock on my dashboard and said, I really have to go now.
Oops.
But yeah.
Sorry about that one.
Yeah. Well, you know, getting back to the zero-day exploit thing, there are a great number of them that are out there, and they're all out on the dark net. And for those of you who don't know what the dark net is, it's the World Wide Web. There's not two webs.
Right.
But it's
areas, an underground society.
It's areas that you can't reach from Google. You know, you can't find them. You have to know about them. So there's, you know, people that you can, if you know somebody on a particular type of bulletin board or whatever, you can get the addresses of these places. They are not on any search engine. They are not easily findable. And these are the places where you can buy these exploits and then, you know, if you want to use them for your own nefarious purposes, or as many people do, for your own research into how to fix those things.
And that's where you will also find stuff like that, you know, stolen credit cards and all that other stuff, where you can get in on it, and that's where, you know, all of a sudden your credit card is charged up the yin yang on out because it got stolen, and they pass it out under the in the underground as a valid number, and people, boom. And I've seen them literally take, say, a $3,000 credit card, because the FBI did this, and they put it up there. The first time, it took them, I think, a little over 5 minutes for them to, you know, actually get this out. Once they saw that this guy that was posted it was legit, a little bit later, he posted another card. This one was worth $4,000. I think that took less than a minute or so to totally be depleted, because they knew it was valid. Boom. And all of a sudden, you know, and again, it was another one of these scams that are coming down from South Africa, and they were buying stuff and that, and they were asking folks, oh, we're going to have it shipped to you, and would you mind sending it down? We'll give you a postage and all this other stuff. And yeah, never happened.
Yeah. These guys have seen it way more than I have, because in a lot of cases, they get a phone call from somebody who says, oh, I'd like to buy a half a dozen MacBook Pros.
Yeah.
And can you drop ship them to this address?
And that's always a big clue.
What?
That's always the big clue.
Yeah, it's always a big clue. Oddly enough, though, I'm doing that right now myself. I mean, we're spending Christmas with relatives, so I'm drop shipping stuff to their house, so I don't have to pack my car.
Yep.
Right? For the day trip. So... and I get that, but all right, to the phones. Our first caller is Zim from Churchville. Hi, Zim. What's up?
I've got a little problem with Windows speech recognition.
Yeah.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to take speeches or anything from YouTube and transfer it into written text.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
I had sent you guys a email. I guess you didn't receive it.
I did not see it. I apologize.
No. Okay. Let me just read it to you.
Sure.
Good morning, guys. I have attached a prior email to you, which describes the Lenovo laptop I have, and I purchased the modem keyboard headset with microphone and wireless mouse that you recommended. That's where the email came in. I had sent you something before. I have become aware of Windows speech recognition and find it would be very useful when listening to YouTube and other lectures, since it would allow me to have a hard copy of the lecture for review after listening to it the first time, rather than going back to the original on the computer. Here are some of the problems that I have encountered. One, the recognition system does not recognize all of the words, even though it has gotten better at recognizing my voice. Two, since it is not my voice that it would be recognizing, I assume I can adjust the volume on the computer to aid the recognition problem. And three, will it be necessary to have a separate recording device to copy the speech/lecture and then play it into the speech recognition device? And lastly, are there any other problems that you can foresee to make this Windows speech recognition work under these circumstances?
Basically, it's not going to.
Yeah, that's the bottom line.
Yeah. You can get a company called Nuance that makes a program. I'm trying to find the name of it.
Dragon Naturally Speaking.
Right, but they have a version specifically for dictating off of videos and websites. The speech recognition built into Windows and Mac is designed to be basically to be live speech dictation from the microphone on the computer. And so it's just not going to be able to do websites and videos. It's just not designed to do that. In many cases, there are closed captioning you can turn on the video, so you can see what the speech is. But in general, you know, you're not going to be able to record this and dictate it off the internet like that.
And what did you suggest?
Hold on. Stay on the line. We got to take a quick break. Stay on the line. We'll come back to you after this break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Zim from Churchville, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Don't know what that was about.
I don't know. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we still have Zim from Churchville on the line. Welcome back, Zim.
Thank you.
Okay, here's the deal. There's no perfect solution. If the video has already been transcribed with closed captioning, you can look at that and perhaps even download it.
And most YouTube videos have closed captioning built in with automatic dictation, if not an actual transcription service.
It can be fairly ugly, but it's a good place to start. Steve is also posting a way to do that. It's a little convoluted, but a way to do that with other YouTube videos. The simple reality is that most of that is in the hands of the people who created the video. Google is trying to make their videos friendly for the deaf community, but it is certainly possible to override that. And it's not particularly good to begin with. You know, for example, I just slurred the word particularly. So if we were transcribing this, I might say particularly, and you would completely understand that. The transcription software would not. So it's never going to be 100%. But it depends on the speaker. It depends on the circumstances, particularly those times when the three of us are talking over each other. It becomes very hard for the software to manage that.
That's why the best transcription services you get will be from a human sitting with a recorder, and then they can go back and forward and back and forward to figure out what that word was.
But they will be very proud of their service, which they should be, and will charge accordingly.
Now, that means that I'd have to record the speech or lecture and then turn it over to a transcription agency or service to have the hard copy done.
Right. But many lecture companies, especially if you're watching stuff on the web, they have already done that. And there'll be a closed captioning option. There'll be another audio channel, you know, a second audio channel that might have a different language on it as well. And so most of the larger companies already do that to the video they've already put on the web. Or you can download that video yourself to your local computer, and then you can do the rewind and fast forward to make sure you understood what they were saying.
The only problem is I'm using the computer to listen to the lecture and try and download it at the same time.
To download it after it runs. That's usually what happens. Most like us here, you know, we are recording this live and broadcasting it live, but then it becomes available on demand as soon as we process the file, and then it's available for download.
Ah, okay. All right. I'll check with whomever I'm watching or whoever produces it, and see if I can get a downloaded copy of it.
Yep.
That's the way to do it.
Okay, listen, thanks very much. You have a great day.
You too. Good luck.
Good holiday, too.
You too.
I just found an interesting ad for a company called SpeechPad, and they will do human-generated transcriptions for $1 a minute.
VLH will also attach to, like I use it on Firefox, to your toolbar. So if I've got a YouTube video or something like that playing, you can usually click on it, and it's like three little balls that are spinning when VLH starts.
What's VLH?
Yeah, and then you can, it'll copy it to a file and put it down on your desktop.
Okay, so what's VLH? VLH is the name?
I think it's VLH or VLC.
Virtual Lecture. Well, the VLC. Oh, VLC. The VLC, the media player, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, VLC, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's just a regular media player.
Right. Yeah, but that'll also do a capture. I've used it for capturing.
Yeah.
For the audio, yeah.
It'll do the video, too.
Yeah.
It captures the whole thing that's coming down. You just click on it, and it says, oh, it'll give you the list of the files. You click on it and have it save it to the desktop.
Mm-hmm. Most YouTube videos, you can do that yourself already, too. From in the web browser,
right?
They don't make it too easy, because a lot of, especially if the videos are monetized,
yeah,
they want you to watch it with the ads, so you can't mm-hmm. remove the ad,
right.
For those of you using Linux, there's a program called YouTube-DL. You just give it the URL for the YouTube video, and it will download it and convert it to MP4 for you, so you can play it. It's very cool.
Hmm.
But yeah, VLC is a very nice product. I keep forgetting it does that because I use YouTube DL instead.
Yeah.
But yeah, VLC will do that at videoland.org. Nice product. If you're not using VLC, it's easy, it's fast, it has mm-hmm. codecs for dang near everything on Earth, and it's available for pretty much every platform, including Android, Mac OS X, pretty much everything. So you ought to take a look at it.
Yeah, I got into it, a couple of years ago, because I saw a number of YouTube videos for swing dancing. So I grabbed them, and then that way you can, control it and stop it, start it where you want, and it was handy to have. And like I say, since then I've used it for other things that have been great to have, and, pass on to other folks too, especially other links and that.
Right. YouTube, obviously, let us make this very clear. The folks at YouTube, or as we think of them, Google, would like you to view them online, because some of them come with ads, and that's how they monetize it and make their money. And so they would prefer it if you watch them online. For example, if you're taking a plane trip or whatever, and you want to have that available to you, then the ability to download it, put it on your phone or your tablet or whatever, is a very nice feature, actually, and then play it through something like VLC so you can actually mm-hmm. watch it. It's very cool.
Yep.
And don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Again, I have had, as a matter of fact, I even had Thursday night somebody call me at the show wondering about Windows 10. So for you folks that didn't hear it the past couple of weeks,
yeah.
All right, yes, they go, well, they did an update. I go, yeah, that's fine and good. But I says, you know what? I've also had a number of computers in that got through the update halfway, and now they can't uninstall and go back to Windows 7 or the old version of Windows 8 because it's sort of caught in the middle. And like we've been saying, though, hold off. Yes, the thing will nag you from now until next May that, oh, you can get the free update to Windows. Wait. Sit back. Enjoy the holidays. Don't get yourself all worked up that you got to get Windows 10, because it'll just add to the frustration. Because especially if it doesn't go in right. So just take the time. Let them get it right. Because right now, Windows 10 still has, I won't say bugs, features that don't work.
You can say bugs.
I'm trying to be polite. Features that aren't quite working correctly. And it will also give the other manufacturers, because this is the thing we've been telling folks, and I know they're ignoring us, and taking the time and effort to go out and make sure all the software that they're currently using, software packages, is compatible with Windows 10. And again, I had another person come in, got it in, but my software doesn't, this program doesn't work, and I got to have it. And I can't get back to Windows 7.
We don't actually, this may come as a shock to many of you, we don't actually run Microsoft. There are days I'm pretty sure nobody runs. Yeah. That's a different story.
Bill doesn't call us. He does not have us on a hotline.
He's not the guy anymore.
He does
Ballmer's
not.
Ballmer's not even the guy anymore.
Well, I figured he'd still be leaking, some tips to the guys. Hey, listen to the guys on Soundbite.
Right.
But, Bill gave up on us a while ago.
Yeah, he did. The big thing you have to remember is that Windows 10 is a work in progress. Nobody takes the time to beta test anymore. We are the beta testers,
mm-hmm.
and we're in the beta test period right now. And it's taking a while for companies to catch up and make all their software available under Windows 10. Now, some of it will just plain run because it ran without, it didn't need any special hoopla's under 7, and so it runs fine under 10.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no guarantee of that, certainly, and you really need to check with the manufacturer of all of your important software packages before you move to 10. Also, you do have until the end of June, this coming June, to upgrade for free. I recommend that you do upgrade for free, but not necessarily yet. Now, the flip side of that is Microsoft has already said they are going to get much, much more aggressive with the notices about upgrading to 10. Because they want people on 10. They want them off 7. They want them on 10. They want a single user base for everything they do. They want to be able to throw away all the old software. 10 is the transition to the subscription service, which they also desperately want. So they are going to make it hard to not upgrade to 10. But, if before you do any upgrading, check with the people who make all of the software that's important to you. Now, if all you ever use is Microsoft products, like Office, then you're fine.
Not necessarily. Sometimes, if you're running an old version of Office, it may not work on the new version of Windows.
Right. You need to have the newest of everything. And, I've gotten calls, too. I'm running Microsoft Office 2007, and it doesn't work. You think? I'm sorry, but there's no magic here.
Year is this?
Yeah, you're running a product that is 8 years old. 8 years old. And I get that you haven't needed to upgrade, and I get that upgrading costs money, but you know what? There's no magic. You can try. I know for a fact that LibreOffice works and will read all your old files. But it's not exactly Office. And if you are the sort of person who is confused when menus change, you will be confused by LibreOffice. Now, again, 15 minutes of paying attention to the product will mean you're never confused again. Like we always say, it's like buying a new car. You still know how to drive, you just don't know where the radio is. So after a couple of days, you forget you didn't know where all the controls were, and run the car just like you used to. The same is true of switching to LibreOffice from Microsoft Office, but there are going to be those couple of days of confusion that many people just don't want to have to go through. Well, you know what? Too bad. You have a choice. You can either not run it at all because it's the 2007 version, which doesn't work under Windows 10, or you can pay for the 2015 version, which does work under Windows 10, or you can move to LibreOffice, which is free and does work under Windows 10. Those are your three choices. You have to pick one of those.
And Microsoft has done a pretty good deal with the new Office 365 subscription.
Mm-hmm.
$99 a year gives you 5 computers, 5 phones, and 5 tablets. There's a student version, I think, which is $69 a year for one student in an accredited school. But the home and family, you typically mom, dad, and a couple of kids, you might have several machines, or even with one person, you've got your phone, your tablet, and your computer. That's 3 licenses you're supposed to buy.
Right.
So it can get expensive when you buy the single licenses, which is why it's nice that Microsoft has this Office 365 subscription. If you really want to have the familiarity of Microsoft products.
Right.
You know, going to some other program like LibreOffice or, you know, Google Docs or, you know, Apple's iWork. It all does 99% of the same stuff. It just looks a little different.
Right. For most, when we say it does 99% of the same stuff, what we mean is that for 99% of the population, it's all you'll ever need. But I understand that it's a little different and a little unusual, and making that transition can take you a couple of days of fumbling around, and people don't want to spend those couple of days. I get it. On the other hand, for me, it was well worth it because it meant that I was now using a free product that was always updated, always the latest version, worked on every operating system. So all of that was great for me. I use, I've said it before, I use Google Docs now almost exclusively because no matter what machine I'm using, no matter where I am, no matter what I'm doing, I have exactly the same setup. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites. Member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can call us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Apple TV owners waiting for an Apple-branded over-the-top television service will likely be twiddling their thumbs well into 2016 as the company has reportedly tapped the brakes on its internet streaming initiative, according to CBS chief Les Moonves. Moonves dropped the Apple TV tidbit on Tuesday, saying he thinks Apple is putting the program in the back burner. They have conversations on it, and I think they've pressed the hold button, Moonves says. They were looking for a service. Rumors of an Apple TV subscription service date back to 2013, when reports claimed the company was going over cable companies' heads to negotiate directly with content providers, which is, of course, what they originally did with the iPod for music. At the time, and for many months following, it was speculated that a subscription-based product would launch alongside new Apple TV hardware. Unlike offerings from cable companies, Apple is said to be working on what is referred to as a skinny bundle, featuring live and on-demand TV from major networks and select cable channels, as opposed to the broad spectrum stuff of, you know, 40 channels for this much money, 80 channels for this much money, 120 channels for this much money. You pick, you know, maybe a dozen channels, including local TV and some popular cable bundles. Subscription price estimates are up in the air, but some suggested Apple could charge anywhere from $10 to $40 a month. Apple debuted a revamped fourth-generation Apple TV in October, complete with an OTVOS operating system and dedicated app store, but an over-the-top streaming service was nowhere to be seen. Moonves, however, believes skinny bundles are the future. This will happen, Moonves says. It has four major networks, 10 cable networks, let's say, and the price point would be in the 30s, 30, 35, $40 maybe. People will not be spending money on channels they don't want to watch. The concept is popular with cord cutters and thrifty consumers, but cable companies are keen on keeping their revenue structures in place. Duh. With Apple putting a hold on negotiations, it seems the enterprise is being pushed further into the future, perhaps beyond the rumored 2016 release reported in August. In lieu of a branded channel package, the company is said to be focusing on rebuilding out the building out the TVOS App Store as a platform on which media companies can sell directly to customers. And of course, our question to you, which would you prefer, a branded channel from Apple or a bundle of major channels? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-04. 1-5.
Now, Sling has an option where you get several common TV channels broadcast over the internet via the Sling service, Sling TV.
Right.
So other companies have started doing this. But what we're seeing with the Apple TV network streaming is that Apple kind of wants to have this whole package together, not just offer a few channels.
Right.
And as long as one or two networks, you know, hold out, then it may not happen.
Right. But I do think we're coming to that. Cord cutters.
Yeah.
You know, your choice is going to be make a few bucks off the cord cutters or don't, and eventually the money will win out.
Yeah.
So we'll see that happen, but not. They'll fight a tooth and nail as long as they can. All right, our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York, or as Dave wrote, Pervilion, like perverted.
Well, how you doing, guys?
Great, how are you?
That's why I was getting frustrated that stupid pen wouldn't.
Well, I would prefer my channels a la carte. I mean, just, you know, let me pick and choose. I know that's not going to happen. That's pie in the sky. But that'd be the best way to go, you know, and it may be somewhat limiting commercials somewhat. I mean, Now I'm seeing commercials within commercials lately. I don't know if you've noticed that, but
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. You want to watch the newest movie trailer, or that you know, fun commercial you heard about? You have to watch an ad before you can see the ad.
The little green lizard there is selling diamonds too. I was like, I'm watching this dumb comedy going, really?
Right. The Zales diamond commercial inside the Geico commercial.
You know, or my favorite is also watching a promo for a show I'm watching. That's right.
Or worse, for me, there's two things that really annoy the heck out of me. First is when I go to a movie and I pay $8 to plant my bucket in a seat, I now spend 15 minutes watching television commercials before I even see the trailers for the next set of movies.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Well, you get into the theater too early.
That's what everybody tells me. I'm the sort of person who prefers to be there early.
You're calling for the actual, where they say that the movie time and the actual time that they actually start the movie are two entirely different ideas.
Right. Like, I'm also that guy who used to spend much of his time waiting for the last mass to get out before I could park for the mass I was going to go to.
Just to show you how abandoned I've made movies. I think the last movie I actually sat through and watched was Animal House. So it's
wow, you're old.
I am extremely old.
You're still on double secret probation.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing that really bothers me is how they have little mini commercials at the bottom of the screen during a movie.
Yep, ridiculous.
Where the people from that show will walk across the bottom of the screen and do something.
Yep.
So I'm watching a serious, important, emotionally charged moment in a TV show or a movie, and, you know, funny people walk across the screen and do something. Well, you just broke my mood. Why am I watching this thing now?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, actually, my phone call today was in regards to Windows 10. Yeah. I had actually called a couple months ago with some questions and things, and it kind of piqued my interest, and I got bumping around the net, looking, you know, trying to find some clues and things. First of all, I see this as being a catastrophe for Microsoft. I really don't think that Microsoft is interested in the pedestrian license anymore. I really don't. I think that they're kind of moving away from the day-to-day and just letting letting regular people kind of wane and go away. And they're mostly concentrating in military and business.
Well, they want a subscription service.
Yes.
They want to know that every single year they will make X dollars from the sale, from the fact that you have Windows on your machine.
Right. Well, I think the initial rollout, I believe this is what I think. I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all, but I think what's going to happen is at the end of 10's service life, you're going to get one final update, which will withdraw your free license.
Yep.
And then you're going to get. And that's why they're pushing to have you have that on your machine, because they can't do that right now with 7 or 8.
Right.
So your final update, when they say, okay, well, we're done with 10, will be, bang, here's a bill. And number one, the people that I've talked to that are not in the know, don't listen to sound bites or pay attention to this thing, they have no clue this is coming.
Right.
And it's going to be, you know, all of a sudden you can't look at pictures of your kids and things like that, and your computer is locked up, and you are going to be mad.
Well, that's just exactly it. Now, look, I understand how this works because of I have relatives. My heritage is that's a beautiful set of pictures of your kids. Be ashamed if something happened to them.
Right.
Pay me.
Well, it's going to.
For a pound, I won't mess up the sketch.
So all of a sudden, Windows becomes ransomware. And then, you know, it's there has to be pushback you know, from people like my grandmother and you know, my parents and things. You know, they're not, I hesitate to say not sophisticated, but they're more Philistine, you know, and they really, they're not aware of what's going to happen, and it's going to be trouble.
They assumed a contract when they actually paid money to get their operating system. Yeah. They assumed a contract that they would get to keep and use their operating system. Like when you buy a car, you get to keep and use the car until you decide to throw it away.
Exactly.
But what Microsoft is saying is, yeah, that's the way it used to work.
It's a perpetual
license.
But
now it's a lease.
Now, now it's a subscription license.
Exactly. And now it's time for guys like me who, and with every respect, Steve, I've never drank the Apple Kool-Aid. It's just not something that appeals to me. Because I always thought the equipment was expensive, and you know, and it was kind of like like that hippie thing, which is all right, but you know, it just never really appealed to me. But now I can, if you run the numbers and you look at how it's working, by the time you get done paying for your subscription and your equipment, well, all of a sudden Apple is becoming the cheaper option over the course of 5 or 6 years.
Or better yet, and which I am going to do definitely before May of next year, is my desktop is coming unplugged, and I'm plugging into a Chromebook.
Right. Yep. Well, I have a Chromebook, which
Just stick to that, and you know what? Windows 7 can stay on my old machine for the software that I use there that I need. I don't need the internet on that, which I've done, you know, a lot of the homework and everything else, and a Chromebook for what I can use a computer will fit me just fine. Go with the 17-inch screen, and throughout my house, I'll be able to use it.
Right, and I'm also curious, looking in the back of mine, too, I'm thinking about people who have made fortunes on the back of Microsoft, like Adobe and these other companies out here that are so used to building and distributing their products using the Microsoft Windows as a base. And now they're like, well, sorry, we are going to pull the plug. A lot of people are going to stop using the product, and that means tough for you, too.
Well,
you know,
and it's just like any company that has only one supplier or one industry that they sell to. Look at all the companies that disappeared when Kodak went under.
Oh, if I had told you, if we had this conversation in 1975, and I would say, well, look, Kodak went out of business, you would say, you're out of your mind.
You're nuts. It's the safest thing. It's safe as houses. Just go ahead and be a supplier to Kodak. You'll be around forever.
Exactly. They built half of New York. It's like, oh, well, guess what? They're not there anymore.
Right.
You know, it's just a brand name. It's just a color and a font now. It's nothing. You know, and so, you know, Microsoft thinking that they're impervious to having real problems, it's an unprecedented move. And I see them either pulling back out of this or really suffering terribly from it.
Well, they figure most people, it depends, a lot of it depends on how much it costs a year.
Which they're not telling anybody, and it will have to be tiered. They're going to have to, of course, you're going to have your charity licenses, like for indigent, and also you'll have your marginal licenses for students and schools, and then but
students,
you know,
and not
like
for
me.
Profits and things like that will get a different rate. I get that,
right.
But
so
you know,
it's actually, you know, in the periphery, because it doesn't panic me. But this is going to be amazing to watch. This is probably one of the coolest things I think in the computer era that we've seen so far, seeing how this works or doesn't work.
You're right. This is a perfect opportunity for Apple to step up to the plate.
Yes.
Google to step up to the plate with their Chromebooks. Mm-hmm. For the Linux community to step up to the plate.
Right. And I've experimented with all of those. I actually have a Chromebook, which I told you guys last time I spoke to you. Of course, you wouldn't remember. But the fact of the matter is the Chromebook is a very good option. And, you know, we had some visitors here over the holiday, over Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. and one of the kids had a laptop PC, and it belongs to a 14-year-old, so God knows what's happening to this thing.
The
thing was just riddled with viruses, and it was just a disaster. And I cleaned it up for him. We got it fixed. I'm sure it's trashed again.
Of course.
You know, but his brother has a Chromebook, and he's just plunking away, playing his games, having fun with it, and, you know.
Yep. The Chromebook is an amazing option.
It's a big boy option.
Yep.
And I personally am abandoning Microsoft. I'm not going to have any of this. I'm not going to 10, and I'm not messing with this at all. I'm ghosting my drives over, like Dave was saying, and it's the stuff I got now is going to have to do for the probably 15, 20 years I have left on the planet. So.
Yep. Well, it fascinates me to realize the number of tech-savvy people who are saying, at least, that they will abandon Microsoft. What that trickles down to is, I'm an average guy on the street. I go to Windows 10. Who do I call for support?
Exactly.
I can't call my brother anymore. He stopped using Windows 10.
You call those fake tech support ads you see on the internet all the time.
Exactly. Well, that's the problem, isn't it? So what we're gonna find is that tech-savvy people like you are saying, I'm going to a Chromebook, I'm going to Linux, I'm going to a Mac. And now your brother, your cousin, your mother, your sister, who has relied on you for 10 or 20 years for Windows help, they're going to call you and you're going to say, Ma, take a hike.
Sorry, I don't go there.
What?
So it's a fascinating time, and you know I'm going to be in the bleachers up in the cheap seats, just laughing as this thing pays out, and I don't see it succeeding.
No, it's going to be I believe that Microsoft is cynical enough to believe that it will succeed because most people, frankly, are sheep.
That's good. Well, I'll tell you, we should bet a beer and a pizza. And see what happens.
I don't think big business is going to be too enthusiastic to go to Windows 10 yet because of all the retraining that it's going to require.
Well, that's it. I'm not messing with it at all. I'll stay with the software package I have. I'll ghost my drive. So when they fail, we'll just start them again. Unless Microsoft figures out a way to crack that too, not beyond them to get in there and pull a license out of 7, even though you do own it.
Yep.
Sort of, kind of.
Yep, exactly. All right, thanks a lot. We got to take a quick break. You've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But we are going to give you the opportunity to do it again. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we will be back on the other side with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Dave Enright. It's Steve Ray. It's me, Nick Francesco. And it's you, 585-966-5299. 1-800-790-0415. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, hurtling headlong into the second hour. And we have Paul from Brighton, New York on the line. Welcome, Paul. What's up?
Hi. I've had a system that uses the PS2 keyboard for a long time. And quite suddenly, it stopped working. I pulled it out. I put it on another computer that also uses the PS2, and it worked just fine there. So then I went ahead and used the USB keyboard. That's working fine on the computer that was having the problem. I want to know, what was the problem with the PS2 in the first place? Why did it suddenly stop working? Whenever I put it back in, into the old computer, it still doesn't work, even after rebooting.
Well, it's likely that it's one of a couple of things. It could be that the connector came loose, pulling on it or accidentally tugging it or something, killed the connector, the PS2 connector. Or it is possible that the PS2 driver is dead, but that's unlikely, as that's actually built into the operating system. So it's likely to be a mechanical, actual physical hardware failure, probably with one of the chips on the PS2 keyboard, particularly if you got hit by lightning or any of that sort of thing, or zap the keyboard.
Keyboards are so cheap nowadays.
Well,
that's what I thought might have happened. It just seemed like such an unusual thing to happen.
No, it's not as unusual as you think it is, Paul.
Really.
Not at all.
Really? No, not at all.
No, sadly, it's not.
Just like mice dying.
Yep. Yeah. In particular, in the winter, people shuffling across a floor and they touch that keyboard or that mouse and they get a little shock. Well, it's not a big shock to you, but it's an awful big shock to the electronics in that device.
Yeah.
Sometimes it kills the keyboard itself. Sometimes it kills that connection on the motherboard. And it sounds like you just got unlucky.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I have the USB, so I can continue to use that.
There you go.
Right, yeah. right.
Thank you.
Yep, all right. Good luck. Bye-bye. Yeah, we see that a lot. I always tell people what you need to do is, in the computer room, get rid of the rug.
Yep.
Get rid of, just get a plain wooden chair. And compute naked. And then the likelihood of any sort of spark is significantly lower.
And, well, what I've always told folks, too, is if you're going to go into your computer, say, to clean it out or anything else, especially this time of year, is, one, turn it off, of course, and leave it plugged in. Because once you take the case off, and you usually lay it on its side so you can look at it, you grab the actual metal case. Don't stick your hand right on in there. You're going to take the case, you know, so you can get in there and vacuum. Take the cover off. It's usually a side panel. Lay it down on its side. Touch the frame of the case so you're grounding yourself. And then you can get in there and blow it out if you want, or suck up any dust bunnies and everything else that might be living in there, which can, at this time of year, overheat a computer.
I'd make one small addition to that.
Go ahead.
After you turn it off, my nakedness, after you turn it off, unplug it and hold the power button down for 30 seconds to drain the capacitors. Then plug it back in. That way you're absolutely certain there's no charge anywhere in that power supply. That's the only addition I would make to what you're saying.
Those capacitors, they store a ton of power for quite a while.
Yeah.
That was true. You know, if you're going into the power supply, yes. But
to be secure.
No, yeah, it does hurt. But then plug it back in.
Yes, I'm saying.
You want it grounded.
Yeah, you got to have it back in. The key thing, folks, is to ground it. Yeah. Even if you have a grounding strap, that's even better.
Yeah.
You can leave it totally unplugged as long as you got a grounding strap, and they're not that expensive. If you're the type that likes to go in there once in a while, it's a good investment for a few bucks. You can get a grounding strap, hook it up, and then you don't ever have to worry about shorting something out. Because I've seen folks get in there, and they play around, and they can touch, you know, like you say, one of the capacitors or whatever in there. And I've seen, for a while there, they used to have a Pico fuse near there, and folks would get in there and start playing around. It was in a bad spot. It would get broken, and then part of the motherboard wouldn't work. Because that Pico fuse did its thing. It protected it from a surge, and you happened to hit it, and boom, popped it. So you got to take out the whole motherboard, unsolder that Pico fuse, and the thing is small, like a grain of rice.
Well, they're not kidding when they say Pico. It's tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take much to knock one out. If you're in there and you don't know what you're doing, and you're fumbling around, and I've seen folks, no. Be careful.
I teach a hardware course at RIT, and I've seen kids stick their hands in a machine. The machine is plugged in, they're grounded, it's off, but they get a heck of a zap because they didn't unplug it, hold that power button down, drain those capacitors, then plug it back in again. But they've got grounding straps, they got all that stuff, but there's residual electricity in there. So that's the only addition I would make to your... And you're right.
It's all good, safe advice. You know what I mean? Anything that we can keep our listeners, you know, safe, that's the bottom line. You know, and will we tell you actually how to, you know, do the other stuff? No, because we're trained professionals. I've done it for over, you know, 25 years, and I'm not going to walk you through step by step.
Right.
You want it done? Yes, Steve or I could do it. But and I've had some folks, well, what should I do? You want to bring it in? No, I thought I could do it myself. Well, then go ahead. Have fun.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but I'm not here to teach you to do that. It's not,
yeah.
It's not my job, and it's not something I want to do.
Yeah.
I know that you have the big shop vac thing that you blow your computers out with, take it out in the back. And
right. And that's, again, it's just not a regular, you know, compressor.
Right.
That has an what they call an inline filter.
Right.
Because one thing folks got to realize, you know, you just can't take it down to the local gas station because they got an air hose out there and take it and blow it all out. There is moisture in those airlines, whether you want to believe it or not. And I can prove it. I have on my shop, I have this special air hose, which has this huge air filter
which
on
pulls
it, which
the moisture in the
pulls all
out.
The moisture out of it before it even hits a computer. Because if you're spraying it, you're spitting out, and it's a fine mist.
And that just builds up static charge. That's that was my point in bringing
yeah,
it up.
Yeah,
and you can build up a static charge. They sell those bottles of
yeah. Be careful of those
air.
Compressed air very dusters. Yeah.
Yeah, because they can build up moisture too.
Yep.
Boyle's law of expansion of gases. When exactly. The compressed air decompresses, it will condense the water around it.
Yep.
And so
yep.
You get a little water vapor coming out of there, mm-hmm. too.
Yep. And people don't realize that, and they blow out the inside
if
and
you
think,
can,
oh, that was great.
If you can see the air coming out of it, you're not seeing the air, you're seeing the water.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah,
that's exactly
yeah.
right. I've seen people do that. They blow air on it, and suddenly there's a film, like a dew, on the thing. And I always say to them, you know, you really need to wipe that up and then let it evaporate for a couple of hours before you start playing with that piece of electronics.
What's really
again.
Freaky is some of the electronic cleaner products we do. It is liquid, and you spray it on your computer equipment. And it's always that, really? I'm supposed to do this?
Yeah, right. But that's a non-conductive
It's a non-conductive fluid. It's supposed to clean, and it evaporates really fast.
Yeah.
Bringing up the canned air just brought back, it was maybe a couple weeks ago, I had a computer come into the shop. And the guy said he was cleaning it out, you know, and now the thing won't work.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take a look at it. And sure enough, you know, I got it on the bench and tried to play. No post boots at all.
Wow.
Nothing.
Wow.
Not a thing. It's an old IBM case.
Oh, nice.
Old IBM case. So I call him up, and I says, I'm not getting any post-boot. Well, that's a brand new motherboard. I go, yeah, what was going on? Well, I cleaned it, and then I noticed after the the sound card came loose. Well, it was on, and I pushed it back in.
And did you hear the crackling, shorting sound?
Yeah.
Or smell burning electronics?
He goes, but it's a new motherboard. I go, yeah. It was.
Now it's new.
Broke.
Nothing.
Yep.
And, you know, it's
we get so many people that have spilled onto their computer. And in that moment of panic, the first thing you do is turn it on to make sure it still works.
Yep.
Which is the worst thing to do.
Yeah.
Don't put power and fluid in the same location.
yeah. We see people do it all the time. How many times have you turned a laptop over and liquid comes out? Or a fine dust comes out?
Dust? How about lunch?
That's why I have my rubber keyboard guard.
Sure.
I mean,
and you take this off and wash it, and you don't realize how disgusting your fingers are.
I've had some keyboards that looks like they, you know, ate six Happy Meals over it.
We've seen people that have rubbed the letters off their keys.
Oh. Yes. And I get it. You use it a lot, and that's what happens. And it's a well-used and well-loved and all that keyboard. But the reality is there comes a point. Now, one of the things I like about my Chromebook is it's got those chiclet keys, so it's very hard to get food underneath them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not impossible.
No.
Just very hard. And so that's nice. But you see it more and more often, particularly, you know, people... eating in their offices, people eat at their keyboards, people in their homes nowadays, you're sitting there drinking a soda or an adult beverage or whatever, and you're not paying a lot of attention, it's late at night, and you knock it over, in it goes, and you're right, the first thing people, it's already on,
yeah,
which means you're doomed, or the first thing you do is, oh my God, is it still working? Yeah, I get it, I do. All right, let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Steven. From Walworth, New York. Welcome, Stephen. What's up?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Have a printing problem with two computers and have done some investigation and trying some different things, but it's still not resolved.
Okay.
It first happened on my laptop, Windows 8. Go to print, it says two boxes pop up, can't print, and there are no pages selected to print. And then it started happening on my wife's computer, desktop, with Windows 7. So reinstalled all the drivers. It's a Brother laser printer, network printer. Nothing worked, got on the internet, and come to find out that it's only when I have a PDF open in Adobe that won't print. Everything else print, Word documents and things like that. So some more investigation. People said, well, you need to do an update. Tried that, didn't work. Then you said you need to go into preferences and uncheck some boxes about security.
Yeah, when someone creates a PDF, they can add security to it so that it cannot be printed.
Yeah, this is every PDF document I've tried. I've tried dozens. And I've unchecked all the security boxes, and sometimes it locks up my laptop, and I have to restart it. Didn't work on my wife's computer either. And then I uninstalled Adobe and reinstalled the reader, and that didn't work. So finally, we reached to the point where we got Foxit, a different PDF reader.
There you go.
Yep.
And that works fine, but I guess Adobe is trying to run Adobe on these two computers is...
Look, Adobe, their day is done. I'm sorry. Every product they have is crap. I hate to be the one to say that, but it just, they don't work, or they're behind in security, or there's a brand new exploit every 42 seconds. I'm tired of them.
Did you hear they're discontinuing Flash?
Yeah, they're changing the name.
By changing the name to ProAnimate. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like Microsoft has stopped selling Internet Explorer. They changed the name to Edge.
Yeah.
Right. So you're right. Foxit Reader, Steve and I had both jumped on the Foxit website to tell you about it. The Foxit Reader is a secure PDF reader. Millions and millions, hundreds of millions of people are using it. It actually lets you not just view them, but create them, annotate them, and print them. And it's a great product. It's well supported.
It's printing free. Now PDFs, and yep. It seems to be pretty fast. Adobe seems to have slowed down. I've got this Adobe Reader DC now, and it seems bloated. It's got all these extra features,
yeah,
and it just takes a long time to start, and it takes a long time to open up documents. So,
yep.
I guess I should be happy without Adobe and just continue using Foxit then, right? Yep.
Absolutely use Foxit. It's a great product. It also, by the way, lets you print, create PDFs for Microsoft Office, which Adobe didn't used to do.
Without paying for the $600 Acrobat Pro.
Right, without paying for anything. It has annotation tools. You can sign PDF documents. It works on Windows and OS X and Linux and Citrix, by the way, for those of you still using Citrix. It really is an amazing product. It's called Foxit Reader. They're at version 7 right now. Steve will put up a link to it. And it's a great product. Well done, you.
Okay. Thanks a lot for confirming that, gentlemen. Yep. Have a nice day.
Have fun, Stephen. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Charlie from Rochester, New York on the line. Welcome, Charlie. What's up?
Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
Peachy, you?
Good. You hear me okay?
Yeah.
Good. I'm in the middle of a security tangle.
Yeah.
For Windows 7. And I'm in the step where you try to open up the hard drive at the root level, quote unquote, and look for temp files.
Yeah.
And I am an ignoramus at this stuff. I did find instructions online at whatthetech.com that appeared to be how to do that. I will quickly run through them for you so that you can tell me whether I'm in the right place. You started by pressing Win E to open Windows Explorer. And then you go under Organize, and then Folder and Search Options, and then View, and then you click the box, wherever, to show hidden files, folders, and drives. You uncheck hide protected operating system files, and you say okay and all that, and then you open up the C drive again. Does that sound like I'm headed the right place?
It sounds like you're headed in the right place. I don't know that I would uncheck hide system files, but other than that, as it says in the actual system, I can't really give you the exact way to do it because every version of Windows is different.
Yes, I printed out your instructions. One of your columns or something said, do that first because this is a long thing and you may get lost in it. And I noticed that. And when I went down over these files. I didn't open every one, but I hovered over them to see if I saw anything that said temp.
Right.
And I don't see anything.
Well, if you actually search for star TMP or star TE, star TMP star or star TEMP star or percent, again, depending on the version of Windows you're running, percent TMP percent.
Yeah, that usually finds it.
Or percent TEMP percent. That should find all the temporary files.
Well, if you do the percent temp percent, that will take you right to that folder where, by default in Windows 7, all the temp files are.
Right.
Yeah. That'll take you to the actual folder. Anything in there, right, you can delete it.
And if you've upgraded from previous systems, then you might have the TMP folder as well as the TEMP folder.
Now, this computer came with Windows 7 on it. That's it. So the thing is, where am I when I start, when I put in that percent?
If you go down to the start, and click on, and it's got that little white window where you can type in a command.
Or go to run.
Yeah, or run. And but usually in that little white window there on the left-hand corner, you can type in percent temp percent.
Yeah.
And hit enter, and it'll open up a window, and if it'll open it up to a temporary folder, and in that temporary folder, if there's anything in there, you can safely delete that.
Okay, so I don't actually need to do this root of the hard drive thing that I did.
No, you don't really need to, and certainly showing system files is a bad idea for most people.
And the problem there is that the direct path in Windows 7 is C, so that's your root, and then you have to go to users, and then your username, then you have to go to the app data folder, and that is the hidden system file that you can't see unless you turn on hidden system files.
Right.
So by putting in the percent temp percent, that jumps you right to your temporary folder without needing the whole path name.
That sounds wonderful. When I did this last night and found nothing, I nevertheless went back through it and undid what I had done to protect operating folders.
Good for you.
Now, the other thing is that your instructions say after you do that, from the root level of the C drive, that you should empty out any temp folders. Inside the Windows folders. So it sounds like your search thing would find anything of that sort, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, TMP or TEMP, mm-hmm, again, right, it depends on what product and which version you're using. But theoretically, that should get everything.
Good. Wonderful.
Before we move on, every once in a while, Windows will say, I cannot delete this file.
Right.
The reason it cannot delete it is that it is actually being used right now by the operating system, so just skip it.
That's what your instructions say. If you can't do it, don't worry about it.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, one last question. A friend of mine who, with long computer experience, made the bald assertion that Windows 10 is spyware. Of course, Microsoft keeps encouraging me to get Windows 10. Should I give in and do it and make the pain stop, or just keep telling them to go away?
Well, as we've said, our suggestion in general is wait until next, say, April or May.
Yeah.
Well, it's still free, but not.
Right. And hopefully it won't be as buggy.
Okay. Thank you so much for your help, gentlemen.
Thank you. Yep. Have fun. One of the things that Charlie was talking about there was the Security Tango at securitytango.com. It is a website that we've talked about for decades now.
Or 10 years.
Yeah, and originally it was a page on Ask Nick, then it was a page on Soundbites, And then it just got so complex.
It went to its own
website. Its own website. So, yeah, you can see how to clean out your system, whether you have Windows or Linux or Android or a Mac or an iPhone, and what to do for each of those operating systems.
We had a customer come in this week with their computer got infected with malware. And when they told me what they think happened, it just makes me wonder how people think this way. They wanted some information on looking at or watching a football game for a certain team. And so they just started clicking on random Google results. Why not go to that team's website?
Exactly.
Or go to NFL.com.
NFL.com.
Yep.
Never occurred to them.
Yep.
And so they're clicking on random websites and get infested with malware.
Yep, exactly right.
Sometimes the most obvious isn't for folks.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's too simple. No, it's not.
Yeah.
They don't try to make it hard and try to stump you. You know, it's...
Well, for the longest time, that's why, what was it, Yahoo.com was one of the most searched for terms on Google.
Yep.
Because people didn't understand the difference between the search box and the address box.
Right.
So now all the browsers, it's a unified box.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you don't have to Google Yahoo.com. You can just go there directly.
Yep. And that's one of the reasons that I'm often, I loaned a Chromebook to a friend whose son was doing research for a paper, and he was doing much the same thing. It was everywhere. His machine was so infected.
Mm-hmm.
I said, look, I'll happily clean this out for you, but it's going to take days to do this. Let me loan him a Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when he went to all these websites that were full of malware, they don't have any, they don't get caught. They don't catch my Chromebook. So he could wander the internet with impunity, do everything he needed to do while I was cleaning out his machine.
Yep.
It's another reason I love the Chromebook.
Yeah. You'll still get the fake message that, you know, Microsoft security scan has said you're infected.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not running Microsoft. So.
Yeah, good luck with that one.
But yeah, so don't believe those messages that pop up.
Especially on a Mac.
Yeah.
Or on a Chromebook.
Yeah, or a Unix.
Or on any computer. Messages, if you don't,
right.
Especially if it's not your antivirus program that you are running,
saying you
have a problem, it's lying. Trying to steal your money.
Right.
Yeah. And I just had a friend got soaked for, you know, one of those stupid ads come up. $250.
Yeah, said, they charge you $250 to put more malware on your computer.
Or just take off what they put on to begin with.
And then
they get their $250.
And they'll get remote. They want to put remote software on your computer so they can fix the problem. And then they'll watch you type your credit card accounts and your bank passwords and your Amazon passwords.
Exactly. And of course, you know, we all kind of fall for this at some point or another. Often it's, you know, I'm stuck in Amsterdam. Can you forward me money? Or, hi, I saw your picture on Facebook, and I think you're really cute. I believe that one every time, of course.
We heard a story about one. Unfortunately, it affects elderly people a lot more commonly. Yeah. That, you know, they were calling her on the phone, and to make them stop calling, she gave them her credit card number.
Yep.
And $2,000 later, she's still fighting with the credit card company to get the money back.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. One thing we have to reiterate, we should probably just make it a recorded announcement every week. Microsoft tech support will never call you.
Exactly.
Nobody's tech support will
support will ever call
you. Not unless you call them and ask them to call back.
And when you Google, you know, Microsoft tech support, make sure you're getting Microsoft.com.
Yeah.
Because you'll find hundreds of companies advertising support that are not Microsoft, and who knows if they're reputable or not.
Mm-hmm.
Any jamoke with a website can say, we do Microsoft tech support.
Yep.
And if they
And they
do
can
it
put the
right,
Microsoft logo on their webpage.
Well, they can make it look as official as all get out.
Yep.
And you'd swear in, you know, court.
Yep.
A stack of Bibles that, yes, it was a good site because, yeah, they make it look so legit.
And there are ways to make
your... And that's their thing, and it doesn't take them much time.
That's
and
one
there
thing,
are ways to make your website come up first in a Google search, and they will do all of those things. So if you look for, I will guarantee you, I will lay money on the table that says if you Google Microsoft tech support, the entire first page is not actually Microsoft.
Oh. They've actually gotten better on that. I just did it on Google, Yahoo, and Bing. It was so funny.
I just lost $10.
On Bing, it was so funny that more ads for Microsoft, for third-party Microsoft people were on Bing than on the other services.
So
the search engines know this is a problem. And so, you know, if you type Windows help or Mac help or something like that, now you're going to get a bunch of ads. And many of the search programs don't differentiate ads very well.
Right.
And that's one thing I've always liked about Google is that when there is an ad, it's usually off to the side. It's not mixed in with your real search results. And it's just a much cleaner web page. So we've talked about you get malware from web pages. Oftentimes it's you know, the seedier side of the web.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be. You know, some bad guy figured out he could buy an ad on Facebook or on Walmart or on Yahoo, just like the good guys did.
Yep.
And I want to find him and smack him. So the chance of that ad getting caught are a lot higher on the big websites, so it'll get caught and taken down. But so, you know, even if your ad gets put on Facebook for, you know, half an hour, you know, a million people might have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good if you're an advertiser. It's also good if you're a bad guy. Now you've got a million people.
Or if somebody's put a link, you know, or linked it so they can go back to it.
Yeah.
Yep. Boom, now it's there. Even though they take it down one spot, it's over in another spot.
Yep. Every once in a while, you see that on any website that takes advertising. And everybody tries to be diligent.
Oh, that's why I'm not getting ads. I have an ad blocker turned on. That's why I'm not seeing any ads on the websites for when I do my fake searches.
And that leads us to another point. Ad blockers are good things in general. For people like me who try to make a few bucks in our retirement by putting ads on the websites we run, like Soundbites and the Security Tango and stuff, it's bad. So we always ask people to turn off the ad blockers for our sites,
mm-hmm.
Just because that, you know,
there we go.
It doesn't really
add.
Yeah, there you go.
Off the bottom of the page.
Right. Yep. But for us, you know, we've got a couple ads on the side of the page, maybe one across the top. We try not to make it obvious or huge. You know, we're not. Yeah, you've seen some sites that it's ads around the entire page and one mm-hmm. tiny little bit of information in the middle. We try not to do that, but I do have a couple of ads on the Security Tango website and on Ask Nick and everywhere else. So if you could do me the favor and for my websites, turn off your ad blocker, I would be delighted and honored. Thank you.
Yep.
Yes. Is that catch 22 that websites are free because there are ads on them that pay for the content.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you block too many ads, then more and more websites are going to have to go behind a paywall or find some other way to monetize. Right. But then
there are some
websites that are just so full of ads that you can't read them, and so you end up not going back there anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I try to have just a couple little discreet text ads. One of them, I think, has a graphic ad as well, but generally speaking, I try to have just plain old everyday text ads so that you can easily get them and easily ignore them. But at least, you know, maybe I make a couple of pennies a day. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Rain, Nick Francesco, you 39 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, I'm going to make Dave say it again. Say the temperature again, Dave.
A balmy 51 degrees.
The 12th of December, Rochester,
51
New York.
Degrees.
I'm loving this. I'm loving this. I don't care what anybody says.
It's almost.
We had snow in October.
Yeah.
We were out for dinner at a friend's birthday dinner, and snow started coming down outside, and everyone had to go out and look at what in the world is it snowing early in Rochester for?
Because it can?
Yeah.
It's right. Rochester.
I've got a news story that we were just talking about during the break. It is hard not to recognize the level of surprise, shock, and dismay that accompanied the release of the Apple iPhone 6S smart battery case. The ugly case was at best a weak solution to the battery life of the iPhone 6S that failed to meet the high expectations placed on Apple by the world's geekerati. Tim Cook has attempted to change the narrative that is built up around the case. There was no mention of it being a beautiful design. The assumption was the case would only be on an iPhone intermittently, and the battery life of an vanilla iPhone 6S is good enough for Apple CEO. In case you haven't seen it, it's a soft silicone case with an extra battery in the back, so people are calling it a hump or a lump or whatever. And one term was actually settled thanks to the interview. We're all going to be calling the pregnant-like bulge that holds the battery the hump. Why? Because Tim Cook said I probably shouldn't call it the hump.
There was a song out by that by the Invictus.
The Humpty Hump.
No, the hump. It was just called the hump.
Yep.
Back in the 60s by the Invictus.
Yeah, so you can tell how old somebody is as to what hump song they
understand. Beansy's Bargain Basement, I still remember.
There you go. If there's one thing going to offer consensus around what to call this little protuberance, it's Apple CEO saying the hump. In the same sentence as its description. Hump it is, then. The silicon case can be peeled back to remove the iPhone from the smart case, solving the problems of users having difficulty removing their iPhone 6S from a case, which is seemingly the case with other cases. I'm not sure how many people have a problem with a snug case. In fact, I'd rather have a snug case than some sort of rattle, you know, some sort of rattling around in there. Unspoken in the interview, but speculated elsewhere, is the idea that the bendable deconstruction and awkward battery hump is Apple avoiding the patents held by third-party battery case manufacturers such as Mophie. What is amazing is the idea that Cook thinks a smart battery case would only be used intermittently. If you're charging your phone every day, you probably don't need this at all. Who has an iPhone 6S and doesn't charge it every day? In fact, who has an iPhone 6S and thinks the battery capacity is sufficient to get through a full day?
But most phones, you get home and you plug it in to charge overnight. Right. We're used to doing that.
Yeah.
The iPhone 6S's battery is too small because Apple insists on having the thinnest possible phone. And then in order to get a full day's battery out of it, they have to add this hump thing to it. And people are laughing at it.
Well, I thought they would have learned from Galaxy. The Galaxy 6 is the same thing. Oh, they were worried about making it a couple millimeters thinner. And by doing that, well, guess what was sacrificed? Battery life.
Yep. Yep.
Because they got to get it that much thinner. I'm sorry. 2 millimeters is not that bad, you know, as far as thickness. Seriously? Yep. To give up battery life? No, I think sales of that would have been a lot better because they're not doing that great compared to the Galaxy 5.
Well, let me tell you about the Galaxy S5, which I have. Yesterday, I made a whole bunch of phone calls. I did a bunch of video stuff. I did a bunch of audio stuff. And then my daughter calls up and says, and she texts me. And she says, Dad, I got a really weird request. I said, yeah. She said, can we Skype later? I said, that's not weird. I'm happy to Skype with you. She said, yeah, but I want to see the cat. She'd been watching cat videos. She missed the cat.
Yeah, Jones and Fur Kitty Cat.
Yeah, so we Skyped for like 40 minutes. We chatted during that, but I had the cat in my lap, and we chatted back and forth, and she was mostly was showing her the cat. The cat actually likes to sleep with her head up under my beard. So she was on my chest, and I was showing her the cat. But at any rate, by the end of the day, all of that, including 40 minutes of Skype, I still had 65% of my battery left.
Yeah.
Because it's just a big, long-lasting battery. Mm-hmm. Because the Galaxy S5 did not insist on being the thinnest computer on the face of the earth.
Exactly.
And so, I won't buy the S6.
Me neither.
It doesn't have a replaceable battery. and it doesn't have additional storage. Now, they're saying the S7 will have additional storage, although I haven't heard anything about the battery yet.
Yeah, maybe they're going to learn, and if anything, increase it a little more to get that much, because that's the biggest complaint, I think, of anybody.
Yep.
Size is not an issue.
Right.
Because, you know, women are putting it in their purse, or guys are putting it in the pocket. I mean, you see them going around with these notes, the Galaxy Note, and that's a huge 5x7. So that size and thickness for a couple of millimeters, go a couple of millimeters the other way, and give that much more battery life
We're
out of
it. We're not talking about a foot thick. I know people who walk around with books in their pocket.
Yeah.
You think a phone that's an extra 2 millimeters thick is going to be a problem for them?
Right.
The only people who think that the phone is not thin enough are the people at Apple and the people who have really drunk the Kool-Aid without thinking at all.
Or go back to the old flip phones. Now, those were thick compared to the thickness of a, you know, Galaxy.
Right. Everybody plugs in their phone every night. My wife just joined the 21st century kicking and screaming. She had a flip phone until like a month ago. Finally got a Galaxy S5, just like I have. And she is outraged that she has to plug it in every night because the flip phone went 3 days.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's a lot thicker and a bigger battery.
It was a lot thicker. It was a bigger battery, and it didn't do anything.
It didn't go on the internet.
You know, she's using it now at the public market, at the Flower City Coffee Company, to take Square, right? So she can sell coffee to people using a credit card, not for cups, but for, you know, people who buy bags of coffee.
Yeah.
Right. And she's been selling enough that by the end of a Saturday, she's used a considerable amount of her battery. And then she talks to me, she talks to her sister, she talks to her daughter, and she looks stuff up, and she, you know, stuff, just like everybody uses their cell phone. So by the end of the day, she's out of battery. She's incensed about it. I mean, first few days, she was angry. Oh, your battery doesn't even last the whole... Well, you know, compared to...
Can't she plug it in while she's there?
She can now.
Okay.
I bought her an extra charger.
Good.
But she was used to a flip phone, which lasted 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, but the flip phone wasn't taking credit cards.
Yeah.
All it was doing was telling her the time and being a phone. So, you know, now she does all this extra stuff with it, and you need a little bit of additional help.
Yeah, no one uses their phone as a phone anymore.
Yeah, no, exactly.
In fact, they could take out, that's why Apple still sells the iPod Touch. Take out the phone feature, and it works pretty much for everything you want it to, messaging and video. And
it does everything else. The only thing you can't do is make phone calls.
And I do that with my iPad with Google Voice, you know, so I can make phone calls.
Well, exactly, and I can do the same thing with my 7-inch tablet. You know, people say, well, you have to buy, who's going to buy those 7-inch phones? I actually have one.
Yep.
Google Voice lets me do all of that and everything else, and if I really want to, I can make a call on that. I can Skype with my daughter, like I said. I can do all of that stuff from there. And, of course, that's a much bigger tablet, so it has an even bigger battery.
Mm-hmm.
So I still can do all of those things and have more than half a battery full of charge by the end of the day. And I would be, honestly, I would be very upset if I had to buy a new iPhone and the battery was so thin that I now had to stop and recharge it in the middle of the day. That's just not good customer service.
Mm-mm.
And I would much rather, and they don't even give you an option. That's the thing that makes me angry. You know, if they had at least an option that said, well, you can buy the super thin one.
Or the thicker.
Or a little bit thicker, and it's got a longer battery life. Okay.
Hey,
I know
generate
which one
more
I'd go
sales.
For. Exactly. Exactly. And so I do not understand this pathological insistence on the thinnest possible phone. I get it. We all want that phone that's on a flexible LCD screen and it folds up and fits in your pocket. And when you open it up, it's transparent. You can see through it and there's actually nothing there. Until we have those, give me battery life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, I do not get it.
That has always been the big thing for folks for over a decade. Battery life, battery life, battery life. And that's what, for a long time, they were so happy to get it up that you could go most of the day and not have to swap out, have another battery sitting at your desk or whatever that you had to change it out midday because, oh, that was the norm because of the phone.
I took a poll in my classes at RIT, and I talked to my students. They said, who owns a smartwatch? And, you know, in all the classes, maybe 20 people raised their hands. I said, how many of you still wear them? Two guys. Everybody else has put them in a drawer. And I said, why? And almost invariably, the answer was, because the battery only lasts a few hours. Well, okay.
What good is that?
You know, the new generation of LG and the new generation of the, what's the other one? Motorola, will last you a day and a half, maybe 2 days, under, quote, normal use.
Okay.
But, yeah, so you're going to have to recharge it. There's a new phone out called Blocks. I think it's the Blocks, not phone, smartwatch. Blocks, B-L-O-X, smartwatch. Yeah, it's on Kickstarter right now. And what it basically is you get a watch, and then you can add modules to the band around it. And those modules could be a camera, a microphone, or a battery.
Isn't Google doing that with the phone?
They're doing that with the Era phone, but this is a watch. And so if you want, you could make a strap out of entirely batteries, and it'll last days. All right, that music tells me that we have wasted two entire hours of our life. Essentially, in the terms of the show, an entire week listening to this nonsense. And so you're done. You're free for a week. Go. Be free. Fly free. But come back next week. We'll have a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You've been listening to Soundbites. Don't go away, of course. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.